As the Philadelphia region moves toward reopening in just a couple weeks, there's another time frame we've all become pretty familiar with.
A year to 18 months.
12 to 18 months.
12 to 18 months.
12 to 18 months.
It could take 12 to 18 months.
A year to a year and a half.
12 to 18 months. That's what doctors estimate will be the time it takes to come up with a vaccine for COVID-19, which they say will be the only way to ensure the virus stops spreading. That's a long time for those of us whose lives are now on pause. But for a vaccine, it would be a world record. The previous record holder, the mumps vaccine, took 4 years. Why are we able to make a vaccine so relatively quickly? And what are the risks of doing so? I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. This is The Why.
My name is Paul Offit. I am a professor of pediatrics at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and I'm the director of the Vaccine Education Center there.
Dr. Offit now sits on a recently assembled panel at the National Institutes of Health that's overseeing the process for American companies developing a vaccine. He joined me to talk about just what's been involved in developing a vaccine and why we can speed up some parts of the process, but not others. I know we're here to talk about vaccines, but before we jump in, can I just ask, how you're doing through this, what we're hearing again and again is an unprecedented time?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. I mean, I'm sheltering in place here in at a place we have in Avalon, New Jersey, with my wife, son, daughter, daughter's boyfriend, nephew, and his pregnant wife.
And everybody's so far remained healthy and everything?
Yeah, and we seem to get along, which is pretty good since we've been here for about 2 months.
So I just want to go through the timeline of your involvement with the COVID-19 pandemic. First off, when did you first hear about it?
Well, I first heard about it, I guess, in December, January, when it was, clearly a problem in Wuhan. I mean, it's too bad that we had to hear about it from a whistleblower, that suddenly there was a strange virus that was killing people in Wuhan. That's when I first heard about it.
And when did you become involved in the effort to find a vaccine?
So Francis Collins, who's the head of the National Institutes of Health, decided to put together a group of people, a couple dozen people, who had an expertise in vaccines. Those people came from the Food and Drug Administration, from industry, from academia, from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, all with the goal towards trying to find a way to facilitate or accelerate the development of a vaccine. Having on that panel also the representatives from the pharmaceutical companies who were likely to be involved in making this vaccine.
So when you started to hear about the threat that it posed globally, knowing how long it normally takes to make a vaccine, what was sort of running through your mind?
Well, I was amazed at the level of international interest. Just that there were so many countries involved, so many governments involved in serving as a pull mechanism to make sure that this vaccine was made. It's unprecedented. We've never had anything like this before. And I think we'll learn a lot about sort of the technology of how to make vaccines quickly and effectively in all this. And I'm sure it's going to be a learning curve that has a certain price to it. Hopefully it's not a human price. But, usually only one or two companies will try and get interested in a vaccine and move forward. Now you have more than 70 companies across the globe. You have many people in academia that are interested in this. There's an enormous amount of money, interest, expertise. There's these tremendous pull mechanisms by the government, by philanthropy, by the World Health Organization, by the NIH.
So which parts of the process of making a vaccine are we sort of speeding through faster than we normally would?
So typically there are animal model studies, so-called proof of concept studies, to make sure that your idea about how to make a vaccine appears to work in animals that you infect with this virus, that animal gets the same signs and symptoms. That's mostly being skipped. When you do sort of phase one and phase two trials and dose ranging studies to make sure you have a dose that is continually inducing an immune response that you think is going to be protective, those are much smaller. trials than would normally be done, where we're doing handfuls of people when typically you would do hundreds and sometimes thousands of people. In terms of moving then to a phase three trial, again, you would do the phase three trial, 20,000 get the vaccine, let's say 10,000 get placebo. While you're doing that, you wouldn't be mass producing this vaccine to make millions or tens of millions of doses because you don't know whether it works yet. It's only when it's clearly evident that it's going to work that you really then start to mass produce. So all those things are either being shortened or coalesced or done with far fewer patients. And then finally, you know, it's not going to be an FDA licensed product. So the FDA has a lighter hand here. They're clearly advising the companies, but they're not nearly holding them their feet to the fire in the same manner they would were this to be a licensed product.
If that works, I mean, if that process works for the FDA, do you see that happening with a lot more vaccines moving forward?
It depends what happens after the vaccine is approved. I mean, if we find that there's any questions about safety or any questions about effectiveness that we didn't know because we weren't willing to do this in the way that it typically was done, then no, I think we'll be right back to where that process always was.
So it's an experiment.
Right.
Yeah.
This is a different virus. I mean, you know, this is a virus that's killing 1,000 to 2,000 people a day. We don't really have the equivalent for that. Flu, I guess, certainly is close. We have about 60, 65,000 people died from flu this year in the United States. So it's, you know, it's comparable in a sense. But we have a flu vaccine. It's just not highly effective. It's about 50% effective, which I think we'd accept for this vaccine. I think if this vaccine were 50% effective, we'd accept it.
Really? We would kind of move back to life as normal if this were a 50% effective vaccine, you think?
Yes, with the hopes that we can make a more effective vaccine down the line. But at least for now, sure, I think we'd go for that.
When we come back...
I understand that we're paralyzed by this virus. I understand we're terrified by this virus. But you can't release a vaccine into millions or tens of millions of people without first proving that it's safe and effective. That has to happen.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov, talking with Dr. Paul Offit, director of the Vaccine Education Center at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Dr. Offit says the fastest a vaccine has ever been produced was the mumps vaccine in the 1960s, which took 4 years. But he says one of the reasons that process moved quickly was that there was far less consent required from study participants than there is today.
The consent form was a 355 index card, which said, I allow my child to participate in a blank vaccine trial, and the investigator would write in mumps, and then the person would sign it at the bottom. Today, consent forms are about 15 pages long, single spaced, so it's a different time. The licensure process has gotten more rigorous. The regulatory process has gotten more specific and harder, which is good because, you know, we want to make sure that at the very least it's held to a very high standard of safety.
Well, in a nutshell, why are we so careful with vaccines? Why has that process only gotten kind of more and more thorough? What's the risk?
Because we give them to healthy people. I mean, drugs, if you have cancer, you're willing to accept a drug that itself could kill you, a chemotherapy that itself could kill you. It's very different when it comes to vaccines. You're giving them to healthy people. So the worst thing you could do there is to do harm.
Is there a part of the process that is just totally essential that you can't really cut short to ensure that safety is there?
You have to do a large phase three trial where at least 20,000 people are in the vaccine group, 10,000 people are in the placebo group, so that you can prove the vaccine is safe or at least doesn't have an uncommon side effect problem, and you can prove that it's effective, if assuming you have enough people in the placebo group who get this infection and then are sickened by it. That has to happen. That can't be short-circuited. If that's short-circuited, then I think that the American public, and frankly, anybody who would be taking this vaccine in the world being treated poorly. You can't. I understand that we're paralyzed by this virus. I understand we're terrified by this virus. But you can't release a vaccine into millions or tens of millions of people without first proving that it's safe and effective. That has to happen.
Right. So can you describe that phase three a little bit more? What does that look like? How long does it normally take?
Well, for our vaccine, and I was fortunate enough to be part of the team at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia that created the rotavirus vaccine. Rotavirus is a cause of fever, vomiting, and diarrhea. It caused about 75,000 children in the United States to be hospitalized with dehydration, meaning water loss, and about 60 would die every year. To prove that our vaccine was safe and effective, we did a prospective placebo-controlled trial of 70,000 people. So 35,000 infants got the vaccine, 35,000 infants got a placebo vaccine. And then we did that study in 11 countries. It took 4 years to do. It cost about probably $350 million. And then when the code was broken and we saw who got the vaccine and who didn't, we realized that our vaccine was highly effective and safe. But that's the way that it was proven. It was a four-year, 70,000-plus infant study.
And overall, how long did that vaccine, the rotavirus vaccine, take to develop?
About 26 years.
So I want to ask as well about some of the specific vaccines that are in testing right now. It sounds like the most promising one is from this company Moderna in Cambridge. It's the one that Dr. Fauci has cited. What is the mechanism of that vaccine, and what do you think is the likely trajectory for it?
So it's a novel concept. It's never been used to make a vaccine before. The strategy is that you take messenger RNA, which then has the genetic material that when inoculated into people is taken up into cells, and that genetic material is then translated to a protein. Then in theory, your body will make an immune response directed against that protein, and since that protein is critical for the virus binding to cells, you can then prevent with those the antibodies that you make, and then if you're challenged with the natural virus, you can in theory prevent the virus from binding to cells. But I wouldn't say any vaccine has the lead. I think Moderna has the lead in press release. But again, all these programs are very early in their development, very early meaning sort of stage one, early stage two. We have no idea whether any of them work or any of them are safe. We'll see. So I think we need to keep an open mind to that. We're so desperate for a vaccine that everybody just keeps coming out with their press releases about how they're going to make millions of doses and how they're sure it's going to work. There should be a little humility here with this. I mean, this is an unusual virus, this bat coronavirus that's just made its debut in the human population. It's already done some things that have surprised this. It's more contagious than we thought. It's more contagious than influenza. It now is shown to have this unusual syndrome in children that is so-called Kawasaki's-like, which just means that it causes a diffuse vasculitis, meaning inflammation of blood vessels, since every organ has a blood vessel, therefore it's a multi-organ disease. That was also unanticipated. I think we can assume that as we move along on this vaccine, that we might find things regarding safety or effectiveness that we hadn't anticipated. So go slow, be humble, and do it right. So this is being done quickly for a virus that we don't know a lot about, or at least that continues to surprise us. So I really wish companies would stop saying when this vaccine is going to be out, because they don't know that yet. Why don't we do this one step at a time, do it carefully, and let's see what we find before we start crowing into the microphone.
Well, Dr. Offit, thank you so much for speaking with me.
My pleasure.
Dr. Paul Offit is director of the Vaccine Education Center at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. The Y is produced by Annette John Hall, Alex Stern, and Kelsey Hansen, with editorial direction from Katie Colinari. We had editing help on this episode from Eugene San. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. Stay safe, and we'll see you Thursday.